Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the 8th chapter, text number 6. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam jajati anta kalivaram tam tam evaiti kunteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Translation. Whatever state of being one remembers, when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Purport. The process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is here explained. A person who at the end of his life quits his body thinking of Krishna attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord, but it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Maharaj Bharat, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of his life, and so in his next life he was transferred into the body of a deer. Although as a deer he remembered his past activities, he had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thought at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If one's present life, one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental, spiritual, not material. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's state of being at the end of one's life. The time of death is the moment where nothing in this world is so important as the fact that we're leaving this world. Because at the time of death, there is nothing we can maintain. At the time of death, we are forced to leave. Therefore, that is the most important event taking place. At that point, our most important relationship is with death itself. A devotee understand that it is Krishna, mrityu sarvaharashitaham, that it is Krishna who manifests in this form of death and takes away everything at the time of death. So death is a very important moment. Unfortunately, modern man is not aware that life continues after death, and therefore sees no point in investing any energy in preparing for death, rather try and enjoy as much as possible before death. So here is maybe a critical element into why the culture has degraded to what it is. The lack of faith in anything after death. People will challenge, people will raise the question, what proof is there? How can one be certain? And when we look at proof, it may seem that here we are in a very awkward position, because to prove life after death, to prove the existence of God, these seem to be very difficult things. At least if we try to prove it through a so-called scientific process, if we try to present arguments that for example, arguments like communicating with the dead and things like that are not so convincing. Such kind of arguments are always colored by some doubt, some superstition, some belief, and so on, and are not convincing. Therefore, we will not enter into this kind of proof. Arguments relating to people remembering their previous lives. Of course, there are many testimonies throughout the ages of people who remembered previous lives. But many times, also there is some shadow of doubt hanging over the testimonies, whether people heard the story elsewhere in some book or saw a movie or whether they were influenced by their environment. One psychologist, Ian Stephenson, is quite famous for the work he's done with children in Thailand, and wrote Famous or Notorious, right? Depending who you're talking to. Some are convinced that he has proven reincarnation very effectively, and others think that it's total bogus, right? And just fabricated cases and so on. Children who were interviewed a lot, many years after their actual experience, and it had all been mystified by the environment. The people around them had made a whole wonderful thing around the story, and it said this clearly would have influenced the children, the skeptics say. So, in other words, if one enters into these kind of proofs for life after death, then nothing is really 100% conclusive and 100% sure. Now, so what to do? The doubt remains in that case. Right? How do we know there's life after death? So in Krishna consciousness, the approach is different. We're not asking to believe. We're not asking anyone to believe that there is life after death, but we are simply asking people to suspend their doubt, and to say that at least accept the possibility, as you cannot rule out that there might be life after death. Yeah, you cannot say there is not. That you cannot prove either. So there might be. Right? So be open to the possibility. Then chant Hare Krishna. Then engage in devotional service. And then Krishna will actually reveal it. Right? Krishna will reveal to us the eternal nature. Krishna will reveal the truth of his process to us in various ways. To some extent in our own heart, to some extent through the devotees, not ordinary devotees, but especially through his great devotees. Because we can see that great devotees are not ordinary men. We can see that those men who've dedicated their lives to living according to this transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita are becoming extraordinary. Yeah. So that is an indication. Just like here in the introduction, there are some references. And there is a reference of a professor of sociology from the State University of New York, Dr. Elwin H. Powell. And he says, if truth is what works as peers, and the pragmatists insist, there must be a kind of truth in the Bhagavad Gita as it is, since those who follow its teachings display a joyous serenity usually missing in the bleak and strident lives of contemporary people. In other words, that by following Bhagavad Gita, one's life improves tremendously. We see that people become better persons, more satisfied. We see that they become more and more inspired in their lives, that they have an inner strength to deal with situations and so on. That at least we find in the serious practitioner. We see that those who are supposed to be advanced in Krishna consciousness, that they are very transcendental to all the dualities of this world. They are not affected by the happiness and distress of this world. They let not upset that, upset these things, upset their lives by these things. They simply remain very fixed on Krishna and satisfied within the self. So we can see such kind of personalities. We can see such kind of qualities. And in that way, we find inspiration in devotees. Also, in ourselves, we may not immediately get full realization, but some realization we are getting. Simple things like following four regulative principles, which really are not the essence of Krishna consciousness, but simply preliminary, right? In a sense, secondary. But we are doing, and the world is not doing. And how is it possible to do such a thing? Where is the strength coming from? Previously, such thing would have been absolutely impossible, and yet now it is. Extraordinary. I mean, according to Freudian philosophy, this is outright dangerous. Right? That's not to be underestimated. To give up sex life is considered very dangerous, impossible, not to be recommended, totally against the spirit of the time. And yet, it's happening. And generally speaking, people are not just all exploding and totally agitated. Rather, advanced devotees become very peaceful. So we're seeing that certain qualities, as described in the Gita, are developing. So by partially experiencing some of our qualities which are described in the Gita, our faith is increasing. Then I described, we saw devotees. And ultimately we see the great acharyas, and we see descriptions of their life. We see descriptions of their belief and their faith and how they acted upon it. And we see how it rhymes with the Vedic conclusions. And therefore, our faith increases ourselves. Then the more we extend ourselves, this life, in relying on Krishna and giving everything to Krishna, the more Krishna will reveal himself to us, and the more it will also become very obvious to us that there is life after death, and that it's not just, then we become convinced within our heart, right, that there is, although not necessarily we are able to physically see that, you know, that we are able, death still remains like a curtain, and we cannot really see behind, right? That remains, that may remain, yes, but still, we are very sure that there is another life oft behind that curtain of death. So it is important to think about these logical arguments for developing some faith, because otherwise we are influenced by the disease of this day and age. No belief that there's anything after death. Bhagavad Gita gives us a different understanding. Bhagavad Gita gives us the systematic understanding that we are eternal. It makes sense in that we can relate to it, that we, in one sense, no one, no living being wants to stop existing, except a Buddhist. But otherwise, no one wants to cease existing. We fight. The struggle for survival is very strong in any living being, also in us. So the reason for this is because death is an unnatural experience. It's not the nature of the soul. The soul by nature is eternal. The soul by nature is eternally joyful. Therefore, in this world, we are always pleasure-seeking. It is very strong. So this verse speaks about, okay, so the first portion I have tried to give some indications of that can help us to develop the conviction that there is life after death, so that we can build up the motivation to dedicate our life to prepare for it. Therefore, I spent the first portion of this lecture just simply on that point, to help us to strengthen the motivation. Yes, I'd better do something about it. And, as I was sitting next to a relatively young Indian on the plane who said he was a professor in computer technology in America. Right now, I asked him, "Professor," I said, "for how long?" "Well, for 2 years." I said, "Okay," because he looked too young for, so sounds like what they call a lecturer. But he had given up all the ways of his culture. So I straight away said to him, I said, one of the big problems that we see in South India is that all Brahmanas have simply sold their brain for the American dollar, for the Yankee dollar. And they've given up their caste. They've just simply fallen from their caste and sold themselves to the Americans. And sure enough, he was from a South Indian Brahmin family. And sure enough, you know, he had given up everything. Sure enough, he was eating meat and everything. And sure enough, he knew it was totally wrong. And still every day, he did 5 minutes puja. I told him, but that won't save you. That's not enough. You know that, right? Because you're breaking every rule. Well, I think we should live from the heart, right? From the Atma. You know, I think we should live from the Atma and not just from the Shastra. Right? So, but so basically, we see that in this materialistic society, people are losing that vision of eternity. Of course, there are plenty of people who just on their own have some sense of eternity, some sense of deeper purpose, and we are looking for this. And many of such people become seekers for the truth, and many of such seekers come to the Gita. So it's not that many of us are coming to the Gita and that it strikes us like lightning in total darkness, but rather it's a gradual evolution of understanding, a gradual growth of understanding, and that we are coming closer to it. So therefore, the initial motivation to some extent is there, but it will become strengthened the more we look at the lives of the great Vaishnava Acharyas. Tandra Bhakta Siva Sanavas Janama Janamahai Iabilas. That we, following in the footsteps of Narottam Das Thakur, are praying that we may always find shelter at the lotus feet of the six Goswamis. Because basically, we see in the six Goswamis, we see the perfect example of Krishna consciousness. We see that they were so deep in their relationship with Krishna in this very life that there was no question of waiting for the revelation in the next life. They took Krishna consciousness beyond waiting and waiting and nicely practicing the religious principles and then waiting at the end of life to see if it's all true. Yeah? Imagine, you chant a whole lifetime. Imagine, you follow all the rules and then at the end of life, haha, it all was not true. Right? A little joker comes like and goes like... And then the light goes out. That was it. Imagine, right? These may be some of our dark moments, you know, when we think, is it all true? But then we look at the six Goswamis, right? And they went way beyond that, way beyond that. The six Goswamis were realizing Krishna completely in this very lifetime. They were realizing, experiencing Krishna fully in this very lifetime. And not only that, they were showing by their example, right, that everything was offered to Krishna. They did not hold back. So, as it is stated here, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam charati antakalevaram, whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. We can also remember, ye yatamam prapadyam te tam statev bhajami aham, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. Which is a verse that is obviously related to this verse. So, as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So even in this life, that is available. As we surrender unto Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate, and that is the whole point. And accordingly, we will be Krishna conscious. We can be Krishna conscious on a theoretical level, on a philosophical level. We can be Krishna conscious on a sentimental level. The philosophical level is higher than the sentimental level. If merely we come out of sentiment, then what will happen? Just like there was in the early days, there was one person who came to Srila Prabhupada, and he was a hairdresser, and he had a great service attitude. He would, if Prabhupada would step out of a door, he would put the shoes ready, right? So the Prabhupada could just step into the shoes. He had an eye for these things, right? And so on, open doors, and just there to hand something. And one day Prabhupada said, today you will come on sentiment, and tomorrow you will leave on sentiment. Right? So if merely we come to Krishna consciousness on sentiment, that's not good enough. Sentiment is very, very weak. Because sentiment is basically, it depends on having a good feeling. But in Krishna consciousness, we have to pass the test, right, of staying involved in Krishna consciousness even when there's no good feeling. For sure, that day will come when the feeling is not so good, when the response of those people who are involved is no longer so inspiring, or just being with them. Because in the beginning, when something is new, it looks like the most wonderful thing, but after a while it gets routine. In the beginning, when one first sees the devotees, we think they are the most wonderful people we have ever seen. We think they are from another world. But then after a while, we think, well, you know, but you see, just wait till you get to know them. They are not like just so otherworldly. There is some of that worldly side in them. Anyway, I won't mention it to you, but just look for yourself. Keep your eyes open. Right? Don't be naive. Right? And that may be said by someone who's been around, right, longer than we have. So, and we already had some of that from our previous material conditioning. Don't be naive. So it is like that. We look upon people and we see human frailties in Vaishnavas. Very much so. Very much so. So we gradually begin to think, or begin to feel a little less inspired, and so on and so on. Many other reasons, maybe, why the sentiments may turn. The chanting may not so quickly produce results, and so on and so on. All reasons why our sentiment may turn from positive to negative, to being tired, to struggling, to doubt. Because one who is sentimental is always looking for that good feeling wherever it comes. Right? Wherever it comes. Basically, one who is sentimental is mental. Sentimental means mental. Means one who follows the mind. Who follows the direction of the wind. Who follows the changing of the circumstances, who follows the changes of thinking, feeling, and willing, the functions of the mind. And therefore, a sentimental person cannot survive. So philosophy is adding a different element to it. Philosophy is giving us a full and logical picture. Something that is coherent, that gives us a nice purpose to life. It may not be complete scientific evidence, but it is altogether, it gives meaning. If we are just from a biochemical origin, what is the purpose, and there's no real purpose to life, then philosophies like existentialism become relevant. There's no meaning to life. What is the purpose of it all? There is no purpose. And then what? Right? Then everything becomes very empty, and then it becomes depressing, and then one needs to do something about that depression, some way or other. So, such philosophies are not satisfying. So we see that the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is satisfying to the heart. Even Nietzsche, who would basically say that God is a creation of man, that in that, and just simply a creation of man, so that man can feel better. Right? I mean, in that very statement alone, there is a recognition that man feels better, right, in living with the concept of a God. Right? So we see that with the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, man feels better, much better, right, than without. Which in itself is an argument in favor of the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. It may not be taken as a scientific argument, but still is an argument. And for ourselves, it's an argument that has merit. Right? It's convincing. I'd rather live with that philosophy, with a philosophy that I feel better with, than with a philosophy that makes me depressed. Right? So it's a criterion. It's a criterion in our own choices in life. So anyway, but once we apply ourselves very serious to Krishna consciousness, then somewhere along the line, when we are moving from the Kanista Adhikari platform into the Madhyam Adhikari platform, then a major transformation takes place. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur places the Madhyam Adhikari platform at Nista, which is quite a, in his Bhakti Tattva Viveka, which is quite a high level, right, one might say, for classifying the Madhyam Adhikari, the intermediate devotee. Basically stating that, yes, he must go through the stages of having initial faith, the stage of being with devotees, the stage of becoming fixed in the regulated practices of devotional service, and then applying himself seriously to purification until he comes to the point of being firmly fixed. Then we accept him as an intermediate devotee. So such an intermediate devotee is a highly advanced devotee, is a devotee who is not merely practicing Krishna consciousness theoretically, because such a devotee is one who gives up his material securities. He's no longer banking on this material arrangement or that material arrangement. He's banking on Krishna. He's banking on Guru and Gauranga. And he has full faith that everything will come. Krishna bhakti koila sarva karma krita hai. That from practicing Krishna consciousness, all benefits will come. He's certain and sure about that. So that's the state where real spiritual life begins. That's the state where one really begins to experience Krishna directly. That's the state where one goes beyond theory. But the Kanista state is the state of practicing devotional service while at the same time investing in our material enjoyment. And at the same time holding on to it. And at the same time holding on to our securities in this world. All the good that I have achieved is very valuable to me. I require this. Now there is a distinction between holding on to material facilities just to hold body and soul together and holding on to material facilities for sense gratification. There's a distinction between the two. But if we really, that level for surviving in this world is acceptable. But the level of holding on to so many material things is simply going to cut us off from the direct experience of Krishna. Of course, if Krishna desires, he can always reveal himself to anyone and everyone. But in a permanent manner, where we are beginning to experience the presence of Krishna very strongly, and that comes at Nista, at the Madhyam Adhikari stage, and becomes solidified deeper and deeper as one advances, and it becomes the overwhelming predominant experience in the Uttama Adhikari. The Uttama Adhikari, the topmost devotee, he is constantly living in his relationship with Krishna. That is basically the foundation of his existence. And then there are different levels of intensity in which he experiences that relationship with Krishna. So when we look at the six Goswamis, they were constantly living in that relationship with Krishna, all the time, every moment, just seeing Krishna everywhere. And nothing but Krishna. What is Krishna? What's he doing right now? Constantly seeing everything in that perspective. So this is the consciousness to cultivate. This reliance on Krishna. One cannot artificially attain that. One has to go step by step through the process. The initial faith may be there, but then we have to be in the association of devotees. We have to connect with devotees. If we don't make that endeavor to read and maintain it very nicely, no success. Then when we've done that, then we have to become fixed in the regulated process of devotional service. If we don't become fixed in that regulative process, if we hesitate there, stuck. Then we have to really get serious about becoming purified and look for purification and very much carefully work on purifying ourselves. And if we are not going through this purification, how can we become fixed? And if we then are not remaining very fixed, even although material temptations may come, then, and if we don't ignore the attacks of Maya, right, then how can we go on until higher taste, and so on? So, like this, we must step by step go through the process. We cannot, in any way, jump over. If we do so, then we will simply we will walk on hollow ground, right, which can crack any moment. Just like in the north of the country, they have been pumping gas for a long time with a pipeline to so many countries in Europe, and the earth is going down. And it's well known, but it's something you're not supposed to say in Holland because, you know, it's good for the economy, right? So we just have to tolerate that the earth is going down. So if we are not filling our spiritual life, right, by going systematically, step by step, through the various stages, we cannot become strong. So we should use this human form of life. There's a lot to do. So it is recommended that we really make Krishna a priority, a real priority in our life. And then, depending on where we are, some of us are free, not so entangled. If we are free and not entangled, then let's just give everything to Krishna and forget our material life. If we are entangled in material arrangements and responsibility, then stay there, purify it, and then cultivate Krishna consciousness from there. Both are possible. But the point is that we must make Krishna consciousness a great priority in our life. Otherwise, we're taking a great risk, like our South Indian Brahmana, who is taking a great, great risk. I told him also, I said, at your age, you know, you may think that life is very, very long, right? So much time ahead of you. I said, like, you know, but said, just look at me, you know. And he looked at me, he said, well, you must be 35. I said, look again. Look now at the details, you know. Right? Just look at the back, bags under the eyes, right? Look at the neck here, you know. Look at like how it's shriveling up, right? So it's like drying up, shriveling up. The skin is all coming together like that. So you don't get that at 35, yeah? All right, 45, I said, try again, look a little more. I said, older than that, I said, yeah. So, you know, the average age, right, for men in the Western world is 71 years old. It's not much. So if you calculate that, that's not much time left then, actually, right? Of course, you know, we could go past it, but we may not, right? We may not. And then what? Then what will happen, right? He said, well, at the end of my life, I will take sannyas. I will take sannyas. Because the rascal knows everything, right? such a rascal South Indian Brahmana, he knows everything. Right? He knew everything. He knows he has to take sannyas, the rascal. But I said, how will you take sannyas? And I slapped him with the Bhagavad Gita, abhyasa yogi yuktena chita sana nyagamina. If you don't practice, how will you take sannyas? Without practice, it is not possible. So, therefore, tundra charana, tundra charana seva bhakta seva manavas. We have to take shelter of these six Goswamis. We have to follow the process they give. It's a very systematic process of cultivation of our Krishna consciousness. So being serious about Krishna consciousness means that, that we very seriously implement all the elements of the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami in our life. Just like I like to tell the story that I was driving towards the Russian border in the winter for 3 hours through snow and ice, and I was convinced that the world is flat. And I knew that I was approaching the edge, and that somewhere we were very close to the point where whoop, you just fall off. And just there, just before we came to that final point, there was a village with a few houses. And as we came to this village, ice and snow, lots of it. Yes, they invited us into this one house and had this altar with a beautiful deity, Radha and Krishna, with a big tulasi plant, which is like a trunk of wood. And and they'd cooked a huge feast in that house. It was impressive. It was like, how is it possible that they got all this together in this place, in this weather? Right? But they had it. So with great appreciation, I ate the feast, and as I was leaving, the man in the house began to chant a Sanskrit stotram. I was just about able to recognize it as a Sanskrit stotram. That's as far as my knowledge goes of Sanskrit stotrams. I definitely haven't learned them by heart, but he had memorized and he was chanting a Sanskrit stotram while I was leaving. And then some of the people who had also been in the house, just as I was walking out the door, said, "Oh, you have to also come to my house," right? And it turned out he lived next door. So I stepped into the next house, and there was another altar, and also tulsi plant, and another feast. And I had to take a feast for the second time there, and which I had not expected. But anyway, this is part of Vaishnav culture, that sometimes the stomach has to stretch, right? So we have a flexible stomach in this movement. That is a very important matter. It's part of the training. So I managed it. Yes. And not only did I manage it, I actually appreciated it, right? Because I appreciated the bhakti of these people living there in the middle of nowhere. And it gave me a lot of faith. A lot of faith, seeing these people practicing so nicely. It gave me a lot of faith in the power of this movement. It gave me a lot of faith that it works, that it can be done. Right? That because sometimes you think, how can someone do it who lives far away? But I saw it there. They were doing it. They were doing it, and they were simply doing the right things. They had tulasi, they had everything. And they were just, in that way, made it perfectly Krishna conscious. And it is on that strength that Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world. And in these remote countries, right? In these countries, everyone in India was thinking, well, this is not possible, right? I mean, what can be done here? But then Prabhupada installed deities here and made such a nice standard of worship that even in many temples in India, they have to be ashamed, right? If they look at the standard of worship. In many temples, just like our friend the Brahmana, was telling me, he never fails to go to the Birla temple, right? Well, all respect to the Birla temple, but you go and the only prasad they have is those little white sugar balls. Yeah? Because that's all they offer. No offerings. Beautiful buildings, but no offerings to the deities. Or some other groups who are claiming that, that yes, Swamiji, for 35 years, we are changing the dress of the deity every Purnima. Right? Really? Every Purnima, once a month. Right? How often do you change yours? Also once a month. So, in Krishna consciousness, we see that Srila Prabhupada gave such a high standard and engaged us, and that now this movement is standing here to kind of as a testimony to the world that this is how it should be really done. Right? Oh yes, well you see, Swamiji, I mean, it must be, so in this way, we can see that Srila Prabhupada brought Krishna consciousness to the West, and now we can simply take it and bring it to our home. If we cannot live in the temple, all right, let it be so. But then let us bring the full process of cultivation to our home and just make our home a temple. And there where it has been done, there where we find people who have done that, we see a wonderful result. A wonderful result. There where Krishna is daily worshipped, there where somehow or other Tulasi is really maintained very nicely, there where all these things are done according to the directions of Rupa Goswami, there everything becomes so transcendental. Okay, I will stop now. Yeah. No, I think that you know, the work of Ian Stephenson, there is substantial work, you know, and I think that sometimes we can use it. But interesting enough, some of the strongholds of the critics are right here in Holland, in a society named Skepsis. And this society, Skepsis, has not dealt with it in a shallow way. Rather, they have published books, right? And quite elaborately dealt with the cases in a very detailed way. And of course, the books, I don't know if they're translated into English, but otherwise, they are available. And I don't particularly want to enter into that debate. I also don't know to what extent their books are taken serious in the world, and so on. I think Stephenson is gaining some ground in recognition. And if he sticks to it, I'm sure he's just becoming a specialist in researching reincarnation. And it makes him an interesting person. And therefore, on the web, it is interesting to sometimes look up Ian Stephenson's work. He's written quite some books, and some of these books are also worthwhile reading to be a little more informed, because such arguments are can be helpful, as you said, for BI or for any of us in speaking with people. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur questioned such type of reasoning and said that it's unreliable, and that we'd rather rely on the arguments of the scripture or on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So that element's also there, because you never know. I mean, Ian Stephenson can make mistakes. It's possible. Right? And then if he makes a mistake and we are all Ian Stephenson, Ian Stephenson, Ian Stephenson, then he makes a mistake. It's like your football team loses, you know. That's like, it can happen. And that's really bad, you know, especially if it's the finale, you know. We can't afford that our team will lose. Yeah, because in one sense, Krishna as the cause of himself is like we cannot see then the when we look at the term Krishna as the cause of himself, we cannot look at him as cause and effect within a time frame. that there is cause and effect, and that Krishna would be the effect, and then also the cause, and that at one point there's a physical thing taking place where Krishna is emanating from Krishna. It should not be taken like that. Krishna is both the cause and the effect. That's basically what it means. Because he's eternal. He always exists. So basically Krishna is there in his personal form, and simultaneously Krishna is there within his energies. And Krishna and all those energies, the sum total of both, is Krishna also. But it's not any more than the original Krishna. Krishna expands himself into unlimited forms. Dipachire vidasantrama vipetya. From him expands so many different avatars. And Krishna plus all these avatars simply equals to Krishna. Right? And it's not increasing. So it is quite a bewildering point, because linear logic doesn't apply. It just doesn't apply. When we are generally looking at cause and effect, then we are looking at it in a time frame. We're looking at it like into like an increase of volume, right? And so an increase of substance. And all these principles just don't apply when we deal with Krishna. Krishna is Krishna. And he doesn't, even although he expands himself into unlimited forms, unlimited energies, and so on, he remains the same Krishna. So, therefore, he is the cause and he is the effect. In the Brahma Samhita, it says, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satsidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karnam. It is said that there it says, Anadir Adir Govinda, he has no other origin than himself, and he is the cause of all causes. And I think that states it very exact. He's the cause of all causes, has no other origin than himself. I think that's the most precise and clear statement we are adhering to in our sampradaya. Yeah, it is. Therefore, he must be God. I don't think anyone else could pull it off. He must be all-powerful to do such a thing. Yeah, it's not even do. Yeah, well, he's doing. He's active also. So it's not just static. Is and doing at the same time. It's all like, he's always active. He's always. Krishna is very active. Only in the impersonal conception, Krishna is imagined to be inactive. But in the personalist concept, Krishna is always active. Not only is the soul described as always active, but Krishna is also always active. Akila Rasamrita Murti. Always fully absorbed in Ras. Ras is active. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but like for the conditioned soul, you know, the mystery is, does he exist or not? For the practicing devotee, the mystery is how much he reveals himself. Right? And for the, as the devotee begins to realize more and more, he begins to perceive Krishna more and more, and until he comes to the point of like the Goswamis, when that perception becomes like very, very deep and very complete, and then to a point where it really becomes totally, totally overwhelming, totally the reality. And then one becomes eligible to enter the spiritual world, and there one can eternally explore the relationship.